good morning and welcome to the very second meeting for the city council having been here.
Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Okay, we have communications items lined up, starting with number one.
Do we have to nominate Commissioner
Fish Oh, you
to
are
be
right.
President?
You are right. We have an
Since
order of council
here.
Business. Boy, that's even better that he's not here. So, yes, the gavel for council president needs to pass on the half year, and here we are. So, is there a nomination?
I nominate Commissioner Fish as according to the rotation that we do.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? And I don't believe we take public testimony on that. It's probably a good thing. Roll call, please.
Fritz.
I just discovered in reviewing my old blog that it's relatively recently that we started taking turns to vote and do. I think the council president has been rotating for a while, but it used to be voting by alphabetical order, which puts some folks at a competitive disadvantage. So I'm very happy that we do this, that it's done by rotation and we take turns in who votes first. Aye.
Fish. Okay. Saltzman.
Mayor, have you heard on this motion?
No.
No.
Too late.
Have you heard on this motion?
Too late.
This is the most underhanded action in my 5 years. The minute I'm in the men's room, I'm nominated for a position I did not seek, and for which I will not hold.
She will.
Nice try.
May I abstain?
No. Roll call needs to continue. Dan.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
I am delighted to know I'm going to be voting first because it scared me. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Congratulations, Commissioner Fish.
What is the voting?
So the voting order, actually, this is the first quarter. Commissioner Fritz, you are the position number one. So it'll be Fritz, Fish, Saltzman, Novick, Hales.
Okay.
Mayor, when is the next time you'll be abroad?
Well, let's see. 2 weeks.
We should coordinate a little bit so that I'm aware of when you're out of town. There are a few minor things I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then we're the point.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yep. We're looking forward to your service. Okay. Now we can move to communications items, please.
Item number one, request of Steve House to address council regarding Portland Water Bureau.
House, come on up. There he is. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Steve House, and previously I spoke to the council about the Water Bureau and the Powell Butte Nature Park Trail Improvement Project, which is also being worked by the parks. Now, Water Bureau entered into a contract with ratepayers for basically $1.5 million in park improvements, of which about $0.5 million was the Trail Improvement Project. The City Council approved this contract I'm unaware that they required any provisions for contract performance verification. And I believe that currently the Water Bureau is in breach of contract with the ratepayers and has failed to comply with its land use permit. Additionally, I have a memo from the Water Bureau that indicates that they misrepresented the project to the ratepayers and to BDS in that they never intended to comply with the trail guide, and they misrepresented the project's environmental impact, which is greater than allowed by the permit. Additionally, it's still unclear if the Water Bureau has sufficient funds to complete the project as permitted. Now, the land use permit clearly states the Water Bureau must meet the minimum standards of the PPR trail guide. It must install trail user signs at the beginning of construction. It cannot exceed an environmental impact of 110% of the original impact. That's how they got out of an environmental review. And then they must do considerable trail, stream, and wetland restoration in order to meet that goal. Now, this work has not been done to date. From what I can tell, the project team did a poor design. They did a poor public process where they made illegal commitments. They did a poor design, poor work scope, and a poor cost estimate. And they basically have spent the project funds without finishing the project. Now, my estimate is it would probably take about another $500,000 to bring this project into compliance. When you consider that the original park improvements were $1.5 million, and that probably underestimates the cost to the ratepayers because of the It doesn't take into account the true employment costs of having redundant park management. So the true cost of finishing this park improvement project is $3 million. Now, the city could have bought a whole new nature park on the east side for that much money. Instead, what we got is a trail system that has all the same problems as the old trail system and more. So what I'm asking is that the mayor, the money be returned to the ratepayers and given to an organization that can actually complete the project. I mean, that's how things work in the real world. When you have contractors that can't finish their projects, they don't get paid, right? And I think that's the situation we have here.
Mayor, Mr. Howes had sent us an email outlining his concerns. We gave him a comprehensive response, which you've all copied on. And again, I would say if there's something in our response that falls short of what any of my colleagues expect, I'd be happy to help.
Make sure to take a look at that. Thank you.
Well,
Appreciate you raising these concerns.
That's what I've said, where they admitted to the fact that they never intended to comply with the trail guide. They said it's only, you know, they when the permit specifically says they must meet the minimum standards. Also, it says they said that, oh, now we have 14 miles of trail. Originally, there was only 10 miles of trail. Now, 14 is 140%. And you know the way the environmental reviews work is that if you don't exceed 110%, you don't have to basically do a comprehensive. So they game the system. They've consistently gamed the system, and they haven't even. I mean, there's illegal. There's areas up there where they put. There was a lot of from previous projects. They dumped a bunch of excavation fill material, totally destroying wetlands that they were supposed to restore. They didn't do that. Some of the biggest wetlands on the Butte, they didn't even touch, and that was part. They haven't finished trail decommissioning. This is, and they have pushed back hard on me. I have been defamed. I've been threatened. I've been intimidated. I mean, you go up there and you complain.
Okay.
Haven't built the signs.
In fairness, since he's now made an accusation against a bureau I've led for, a couple of months, every time Mr. Howe sends a request for information or a question, Mayor, I have reviewed all the answers. They are thoughtful, professional, complete. And if they are not, he is free to send another request, and we'll respond.
Well, do you think that they need to
please
comply?
You've had your time.
What he's saying is,
I have directed that no matter how often he asks the same question or how many different times he's framed, he'll get a respectful answer. And I will copy my colleague so you can verify that we're in fact.
House, you've used your time. We appreciate you coming in and raising this. Thank you.
So you are aware of this fraud that has been perpetrated on the
Okay, next one, please.
Item number 2, request of Chiao Yang to address council regarding Shen Yun at Keller Auditorium, January 17 to 19.
Good morning, welcome.
Good morning. My name is Chiao Yang. I'm with Oregon Falun Dafa Association. As presenter, we would like to invite you to Shen Yun, a classical Chinese dance and music performance at the Keller Auditorium, January 17th through 19th. Here, I will briefly share the cultural background of Shen Yun with you. China was once called Shenzhou, the land of the divine. The rich culture was believed to be a gift from the heavens. Ever since the earliest establishment of this culture, Chinese people embraced the concept of the oneness of man and heaven. With the guidance of three major religions, people strived to improve themselves through their daily life to reach that state of perfection, to be one with heaven. This process is called cultivation practice in Chinese language and represents the essence of Chinese culture. With Qigong practice becoming popular, the practice of Falun Dafa was introduced to the public in 1992, and has brought the traditional concept and the lifestyle of cultivation practice back to Chinese society. Within 7 years, 100 million people from all walks of life reconnected to their root and embraced the practice. This awakening of people's hearts marks the start of the renaissance of traditional Chinese culture. Now, with Shen Yun, we see this cultural renaissance manifested in the form of art, following the tradition of classical art. What Shen Yun performs is to express traditional values like reverence for the heavens, virtue, and belief that good is rewarded and evil is punished. Zhen Yin has touched the hearts of millions of people. Its captivating power comes from its genuine presentation of universal values and speaking to the goodness in people's hearts. I believe that as more people get a chance to experience the beauty of true Chinese culture, through Zhen Yin, the positive impact of this cultural renaissance will change the world in a fundamental way and help create a more peaceful future for the entire world. We are honored to present Zhen Yin. We invite you to witness this great history. Any forms of support from the city of Portland will be greatly appreciated. Now I would like to show a very brief video for you.
5,000 years of Chinese music and dance in one night. Beautiful, a nimble mastery. An explosion of color and sound. The divine culture returns. Experience Shen Yun. Keller Auditorium, Portland, January 17th through 19th. ShenYun.com.
Part of the sound there.
This way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
Should I just pull this out?
Thank you. A lot. Okay.
Item number three, request of Michael Withy to address council regarding progress report on Portland's homeless issues.
Good morning.
Good morning to all of you. So I was invited to St. John's by the board about 2 months ago to address them on how we could deal with the homeless issue in St. John's.
Hmm.
How many neighborhood associations are there in Portland?
95.
So what we had to do is come up with an idea that would tie together the neighborhood associations, the businesses to deal with the homeless issue in their neighborhood. So we came up with a plan to start support centers in each neighborhood that wants them. It'll be a residential place for people to sleep, but it'll more importantly be a preventative plan. So it'll only be used by people in the neighborhood, folks that are losing their homes due to foreclosure or whatnot. They'll come and stay at the shelter in the neighborhood, but it'll also be a support center that would help prevent homelessness to begin with. So there will be loans that we could give out to people that are facing foreclosure. We will help with job searches. We will help with just about every other issue that would bring you to being homeless to begin with. You would have to be referred by the pastors there, but maybe by the police there, different social workers, teachers. So I polled about 200 people in St. John's, and not one single person said it was a bad idea. Presented it to the board and all the citizens that were at the meeting. Not one person disliked it. We have a meeting today with a Home Builders Association in Lake Oswego to help develop a plan to build one in either St. John's or the Lentz. So we believe we have the support to start neighborhood support centers. There will be shelters in these support centers only for the people that live in that particular neighborhood. Now, secondly, we need to look at long-term solutions. We can't afford to build big buildings to let everybody on the street have an apartment. It's just not going to happen. So we're trying to think of lower cost, more efficient ways to get more people off the street. Eco-villages are the solution for long-term housing. That's permanent housing. Paying someone's rent for 90 days or 6 months is not a permanent solution. So these little eco-homes would house permanently people. So we have to start looking at eco-villages. So they're hopefully going to be tied in with the neighborhood support centers. So when this comes up, I hope that you guys support it. Rob Justice, I don't know if you've heard of Rob Justice. He has a great plan. I would hope that you work with Rob in any capacity possible to help make this happen for him. That's about it.
I like this prototype. Have you met with the St. John's Boosters yet, or just the Neighborhood Association so far?
Just the Neighborhood Association.
Yeah, but I would think the business group would be interested you know, a solution like this.
That's so. The next phase.
Yeah, great. Great. Good idea.
Thank you, Michael. I know that Rob Justice is working with the Bureau of Development Services. If you could please make an appointment, if you stop by my office and talk to Christina. I've learned a lot about the permitting of such things over the past 6 months.
Yes.
So I want to let's talk, because I also know that the good folks in North Portland in particular have a very caring community, and we've been working with the Community of Hope and various churches on what we can do and what we can't do without code changes. So, again, this is very timely because the comprehensive plan is being updated and zoning regulations, we can look at them. But if you and I can have a preliminary conversation, that would be very helpful.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
That's great. Keep us posted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Number four. Request of Mike O'Callaghan to address council regarding zoned communities.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Two Michaels in a row. Same kind of thing, though. I think I've spoken to this council probably now for 5 years about the shelterless issue. Back again, as you know, I worked with Right to Dream, and I have been shelterless for quite a few years. And gave you a package here of permitted munities, mini-munities, okay, small communities. I appreciate that you want to do something with Right to Dream, but if you look at the cost of that, the number of people involved, you haven't got enough money to solve this problem. Okay? This doesn't cost money, okay? It's a safe place. It's fenced. Lots of 50 by 100 will work for us. We prefer larger. 25 humans or less, self-governing, mini mobile houses. We can put them on wheels and move them, okay? And a community agreement. And like it says, when, today, if government will leave us alone, okay, and you look at government's history, Dignity Village, I think, had to move 4 times. Before they found a permanent place. Right to Dream, we forced Right to Dream on you. You came up with this creative recreational campsite designation to give us, which is just really creative. It's not a recreational campsite. The only way we can make any progress with you guys is to shove it down your throat, and we'd appreciate some cooperation, okay? This is a huge problem. You guys can't solve it. You are the problem. That's why all these people are on the streets. If you weren't in our way, we could create something like this. But you fine us $1,500 a month or however much it was. You threaten private property owners. Okay? We haven't got a place to go. We can't go on public property. We can't go on private property. You'll hound us wherever we go. And I want to point out one thing here. I think you all know I'm in litigation with you guys on this issue. On Tuesday in the Oregonian, the Oregon Court of Appeals upheld that a tent is a home. Okay, you can't go in my tent. You can't steal my tent. You can't steal my home. Okay? Leave us alone. I would appreciate working with somebody. Mandy, you seem pretty good about this, okay? Let's create an ordinance that allows this process to go on, please. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Item number 5, request of Pastor Jose Serica to address council regarding the homeless issue.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. Welcome.
Thanks for letting me come and speak to you today. I'm a simple pastor from a simple church. I try to live the gospel every day in my life. I've witnessed the sweeps outside of City Hall. I saw the attack on lawlessness. I also know how inhumane the city ordinance is written, the camping ban ordinance. It allows people to die from exposure and a loss of hope, and we can't allow that anymore. Words mean something. And this hasn't become just about the homelessness. This has become about a war on the poor, in which the homeless are being pushed even further and deeper into despair. In June of last year, the City Council adopted the Title VI plan for Portland, which was supposed to protect us from discrimination. However, the recent sweeps appeared to be in contradiction to a very large body of the faith community that I've spoken to about it. We are poor. We're not ignorant. Many of us are skilled and educated people that have fallen on misfortune. Some of us at the hands of illegal foreclosures by bankers that walk away scot-free. Some of us just can't escape that. That's real lawlessness. And when the bankers walk away scot-free and nobody tells them, not one word comes up and says, give them back, that's lawlessness, and it's also aiding and abetting. As long as the problems of the poor are not radically resolved by rejecting the absolute autonomy of markets and financial speculation, and by attacking the structural causes of inequality, no solution will ever be found in this world, or any problem for that matter. I chose to be homeless while experiencing a cascading series of events that eventually made me a victim of illegal foreclosure. I chose to commit to living amongst the homeless for 1 year. I've just concluded that 1 year, and I have a great education of what I've seen and what I've experienced. We've got to come to solutions that don't criminalize the homelessness for profits. There's got to be eradicated. To follow that direction is the same as selling human lives to more hungry corporations. Our economy kills. How can it be that it's not news when an elderly person dies from exposure on the streets, but it is news when their stock markets drop 2 points? During this recent cold snap, I was brought to my attention that some people have died. Alvin Smith, age 59, died 4 days after the ODOT sweeps. Another man, Danny, was found frozen to death. And then another individual, who is a personal friend of mine, Hayseed, otherwise known as Joe Devers, that lived out here on these streets with us, is now in the hospital having his toes removed from frostbite. Every day, we come upon a lot of problems. We walk around the city with our houses on our back. How do we get jobs when we have to have houses on our back? We have no place to put our things. And if we do set our things down, people steal them, including the police, ODOT, and other people. We human beings have become a collateral damage to big business investments and even more pillaging of the poor. It's time to change the picture that we get in our heads when we hear the word homeless and who they are. Think about the guy next door. Think about the beautician, business partners, various people. Those are your homeless. We should follow along the direction of creating those eco-villages, not tent villages, so they can become constructed to aesthetically acceptable to the neighborhoods. Tiny houses designed using the model of sweat equity, a lot like how Habitat for Humanity works their programs, can be implemented to help some of these people who are homeless and who have skills produce their own lives.
Oh, I need you to wrap up. You've used Thank up you. Your time, so I'll give you a few more minutes.
All I want to say is that Micah 6:8 says that the only real requirements we have is to always do what's right, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you all. Let's move on to the consent calendar. We have a couple of items here. One, item number 7 has been pulled, and Commissioner Novick would like item number 13 to be rescheduled for January 8th. Is that correct? So we'll take those two actions. We'll pull item number 7, and we'll schedule item 13 for January 8th, and let's take a roll call on the remainder of the consent calendar.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. Regular agenda, 16.
16, grant a franchise to Chevron USA for a period of 20 years to use city streets to own and operate the pipeline system.
Second reading, roll call.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. 17, please.
amend various sections of the Public Works Improvement Code for consistency and clarity of general language and organizational cleanup.
Also a second reading. Roll call, please.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, and one more second reading, number 18.
Amend contract for professional services with MWH Americas, Inc. to extend term and increase compensation in the amount of $1,475,000 for the Kelly Butte Reservoir Project.
Okay, roll call.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. And let's return to item number 7. I think, Joe, you wanted to testify about that. Go ahead and read it, please, Sue.
Item 7, accept and appropriate a grant in the amount of $380,759 from Metro for the mixed-use zoning project.
Joe, did you want to speak on this item? Joe, did you want to speak on item number 7? I think you asked for it to be pulled, right?
Yes.
Okay, come on up.
I don't like it.
Okay, well, come
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice, and we have no objection to the item itself. It's just that it's the first one in the consent agenda that is marked as an emergency measure. We are getting sick and tired of you people putting in emergency measures that are not emergencies. An emergency is when your light goes out and you need to get the bill paid so you can get the lights back on. That's an emergency. These are not. You have given raises to people. You have created positions. And they're emergencies. They're not. It's BS. You just want to push all this thing through the consent agenda procedure so nobody wants to talk about it. So that's what you do, and you classify it an emergency, so it can go into action right away.
Well, Joe, in this case, we're accepting money from another government.
So I have no objections to the measure.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm saying it's the first one that comes up on the consent agenda marked as an emergency measure. You have five. Is that right? Five?
Grants?
No, six, seven. You have seven items. Six of them are emergencies. And I'm saying to you, if you keep doing that, then we're going to start pulling every item off the agenda, and we're going to discuss it. Every item.
Mayor, may I address this?
Please, go ahead.
I actually shared your concern as a community activist, and that was one of the first things I looked into when I got on the council in 2009. It turns out it's in the charter, and we can't change. I agree with you. There are some things that are not really emergencies, but on the other hand, as the mayor said, we're accepting money. What happens if it's not an emergency is that we have to wait for 30 days to actually do anything.
Okay.
So then
limit it to this one. Because I said to you is this is the first item that comes up on the consent agenda that's the emergency, and I'm not arguing the value of this particular item. I'm just saying that we're getting sick and tired of all of these emergencies coming up. I feel like you guys should belong to the fire department, that there's a fire out there, and you have to keep going to these emergencies. And it's nonsense, and you all know it.
I understand your concern.
Thank you.
The Charter Commission to propose a change to that in the 2011 commission. They chose not to do that. So when there's no reason to not do something right away, and especially when we're actually getting money and able to do good things with it. I was actually planning to talk about this particular item because it's the opportunity that citizens have to come into the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability right now to talk about the issues that really bother people in terms of zoning standards, compatibility with neighborhoods, demolition delay. A lot of the things that the five of us deal with, this is a very important grant to get that to get the planners hired and do it.
Again, but I'm not arguing the grant.
I understand that.
Why wait 30 days to start that work, Joe? If people want it.
I'm not arguing the grant, Mayor. I'm arguing you guys are using the emergency procedures on these agenda items to run them through with no discussion. And that's going to stop because we're going to start pulling every one of them off.
So if you'd please let me finish. That's one of the things that I take responsibility for with my staff, is that we look at, is this really an emergency? Is this something that citizens might want to refer to the ballot? That's really the reason that we have the 30-day wait, so that if there's something that's controversial, as you know, Joe, you can certainly pull things from the consent agenda. And when Mayor Hales, which I was just thinking about because I haven't made that mistake for about a year.
Once a year.
When Mayor Hales first came into office and Commissioner Novick, we had a lot of stuff on the regular agenda because they didn't want to put things on consent. And it turns out that it takes a lot of time, and that people who are waiting for another item to come up later to testify about it have to sit through a presentation on something like this that really is not controversial. You always have the opportunity to pull things off consent, but just to pull it because it has something that we think should go into effect right away is not a good reason to delay the rest of the agenda, in my opinion, but you certainly have that right.
Okay, 2 points. Number one, we did monitor the Charter Commission when they were doing their work, and they were doing good work. And when it got hot, and that item was one of the items that we talked about, Mayor Adams disbanded the Charter Commission. That's the kind of stuff that we're up against. Okay, all I'm saying to you is, if you think that 7 items and 6 of them are emergencies and you can justify all 6 of them, I'll shut up. But you can't, because they're not emergencies. They are, even taking a grant and getting the money into the system, you're arguing is an emergency. Those grants don't come out of the blue. They don't come out of yesterday. Those grants are in process.
And when we applied for them, they were on the regular agenda. Now that we've got them, in fact, item 6, I'm just checking through here because my staff does look like this. Everything except item 12 is accepting money from elsewhere that we've already discussed in a previous council
meeting. Right, and usually when we apply for the grant, that's kind of the decision point of whether this is something we should do.
Again, Mayor, I'm not arguing the merits of this. I'm arguing the merits that you have a tradition of putting stuff into the consent agenda and running it through an emergency because you want your candy and you want it now.
We have a tradition,
and I'm saying,
we have a
slow
tradition
down,
Joe, of trying to work efficiently and accepting money
that's
from
not
another
efficiency, that's hiding.
Excuse me.
And that's why you keep getting such low grades on your transparency, is because you do stuff like this.
Now, can I speak?
Of course.
We'd like to operate efficiently here, and that is, if we're just taking a ministerial action of accepting money from another local government, if that's controversial, if you have a substantive concern with us taking $377,401 from Metro, come up and say so. Either when we apply,
You all keep avoiding the issue. I'm not arguing the merits of this.
Sentence, or I'll
I'm arguing you keep putting
Joe,
stuff as an emergency.
If you don't let me speak, then we can't let you speak any longer. You're done. Charles?
Good morning, Commissioners. Happy New Year to you all and any of the citizens who might be joining us for this vigorous presentation. I'm Charles Johnson, for the record, and I do think that we're losing track of what might be Mr. Walsh's major concern, and that is government using language that makes the people able to respect it. I'm very glad to get the feedback from Ms. Fritz about the situation with the charter, and I know that you're kind of constrained. You only have 2 processes, normal process and emergency process. But I hope that given how concerned some of us are, that we can re-engage and perhaps getting the charter or the city attorney can work with finding another procedure, because we all know that within the past month there's only been 1 emergency, and that was when PGE couldn't figure out how to power this building for 72 hours. And that's an emergency, and that's what people in the citizenry expect to see as an emergency issue when we see the word emergency. You've even just, in your own words, talked about that this is really an administrative process. And I think that's, for those citizens who are paying attention, that's a little bit troubling. They have emergencies at home, and they're much more serious than this issue of, can we get something done in less than 30 days? So I know with the explanation we've had from Commissioner Fritz about this, being a procedural issue and the restrictions in the charter, I hope we can find language that kind of respects the people of the city that are in crisis and having real emergencies that need something more than just a more expedient administrative process. And I look forward to getting this money ASAP and putting it to great use.
Thanks. Okay, so I have a little advice for everybody, which is there are 240 cities in Oregon. I bet if you look, almost all of them have a similar provision in their charter. We're not unique. The state of Oregon adopts state laws with an emergency clause, same way. So if somebody wants to go work on changing the state constitution or the city of Portland's charter, good luck with that. Here's the substance of what matters in this room, which is why Commissioner Novick and I, when we first arrived here, were cautious about the use of it, and the rest of the council is as well. Each of us has an obligation to make sure that if it's a real decision point, and if there's likely concern in the community about the item before us, that we put it on the regular calendar and invite people to come in and testify about it. If it's a ministerial action like these, I don't care whether we call it an emergency or call it Fred. It's just procedure, and almost no one cares. Thank you, and we're adjourned.
No, we have to vote on it.
Oh,
sorry. We got to vote on it. We're not adjourned. Let's vote on it. I thought it was already done.
Fritz.
Another important point about emergency ordinances in that they do require four affirmative votes and no votes. So that's why each of us does our due diligence, and in fact, in some cases, having an emergency clause has been kind of an issue, because then if one person has veto power on this five-member council. So I want to return to the actual substance of this. I appreciate the concern that was raised. This is a really great thing that we have $380,000 from Metro to do the mixed-use zoning project. Our concern is that the city's mixed-use commercial zones don't focus ground floor commercial uses in high-opportunity areas. They don't allow for flexibility with respect to building height and bulk. And in fact, sometimes they allow too much building height and bulk. They don't necessarily respond to the variation in Portland's urban form in different neighborhoods. They don't address auto-oriented development and create successful transitions between high-density areas and lower-density residential areas. This is the core of what we're doing in the comprehensive plan update. This is probably 90% of some of the emails I get on planning and zoning issues is, why do you allow this kind of development? And the answer is because that's what the standards say. This project is going to allow the staff, hiring of more staff in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, so that when we come with a comprehensive plan package, we will have some proposed changes, and we will have, I'm sure, many robust discussions about whether those new standards are the right thing. Thank you very much for getting this grant. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Actually, would like to explore the mayor's suggestion. If the charter allows, perhaps we could start designating items that are emergencies for the purposes of administrative convenience as emergency / Fred. So I'd like the city attorney to look into that. Aye.
Hales.
Well, it won't seem like enough time. So that's what's ironic about this discussion, is that we're going to actually act on the comp plan in about 6 months. And every day for citizens to be able to actually get involved in these tough issues will count. And there will be people in this room when we adopt this comp plan who will have been surprised by how quickly the decision arrives before us. So the fact that we can get people involved earlier will turn out to have been the best idea I think we can manage under the circumstances. Aye. And we're adjourned.